This is the Patriots All 22 podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider of audio video coverage for the five-time Super Bowl champion New England Patriots.
Welcome into another edition of the Patriots All 22 podcast, brought to you by the CLNS Media Network and the CLNS Media Podcast Network, I should say. And today we are in post-Thanksgiving, you know, festivities here at this point of the weekend. I know I am all turkeyed out. I have had enough turkey for an entire year. But Adam Kirchen, we got a little bit of a scare today down at Foxborough, I would say, when we got out to practice and there was no number 12 on the field. And Tom Brady was absent today from today's practice session leading up to, you know, Sunday's game against the Jets. But came out today on the injury report later on in the day that there was an illness tacked on to Tom Brady's knee injury. So I'm leaning more towards the fact that it was the illness that held him out of today's session. But obviously, whenever you see Brady, whether he's 41 or not, when he was 41 and he was 31, whenever a knee injury pops up on the injury report for the starting quarterback, it's usually not good news.
Yeah, and I feel like we kind of go through this maybe once a year or something like that, where there's
always something,
you know, where there's just like one practice he misses or two or something like that, and people freak out and then he plays. So I kind of am leaning towards that being the case this time.
Yeah, that's very true. Last year it was that Achilles injury, I believe it was. Years past, it's always been that right shoulder soreness.
The cut finger.
Yeah, that's a good one too. And all the reports out there, you know, from people that are well connected, you know, the Boston Herald folks or whatever, are saying that, you know, the knee injury is not that serious, that he's going to play on Sunday. And I think this illness is what really held him out of practice today. But at the same time, when you miss a Friday practice, Belichick says it a lot about Friday is a very situational day. You know, they install a lot of the third down and red zone type plays that they're going to run on Sunday in those types of key situations. And, you know, when Brady's not out there, I'm sure that he's still very much knows how to run all that stuff without the practice session at this point of his career. But it's always interesting. And I think the main thing here is, you know, we haven't seen Brady at the top of his game, certainly, maybe all year, but definitely over the last couple of weeks. Now with this knee injury limiting him in the game, you know, do you think it's going to be harder to see Brady kind of put some of the stuff that he struggled with in Tennessee and even in Buffalo at times behind him now that he's dealing with a sore knee in the process?
I think it could. I also could see the other way around, where sort of my whole view on the Patriots after a bye week, you know, or any time going into the second half of the season, is they correct a lot of things that have been bothering them the first part of the season. They do a good job of self-scouting, and things that don't really click at first start clicking. You've seen it with the pass rush the last couple of years, and I feel like, you know, with Brady, it could continue, you know, like, cause he just hasn't been himself, but, you know, maybe there's something in terms of his connection with guys like Gordon, which we'll talk about later, that will be there, you know, after the bye week or not, but, it could just be one of those things where, he needed to get, you know, more games under his belt for this year with this different group of receivers. But yeah, I think it could go either way, but I think obviously it's definitely a worry, you know, when he's got, you know, a knee injury to any player is definitely something worth worrying about.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that it happened late in that Tennessee game. It was on the trick play when he caught the pass. At least that's what's been reported out there. I think NFL Network, Mike Giardi had that it would happen on that trick play. But I think the biggest thing is that his footwork was one thing that I kind of had honed in on, of something that I would like to see improve over the last six games of the season. And now you throw in a lower body injury and you kind of understand actually a little bit more, I think, some of the throws in that fourth quarter that I highlighted in my film review. It kind of makes more sense now that maybe there was an injury that had him, you know, a little bit shy from stepping into some throws, and it was kind of, you know, protecting that knee and doing things of that nature as well. So we'll see what happens. I mean, I think that the real big thing here whenever we talk to Brady, it's always about chemistry and the fact that there's been so many changing parts and moving parts of this offense that he just hasn't had his, you know, set five or six guys that he knows are going to be on the field when it matters most, you know, come January, out there all that often. And hopefully going forward, especially this week with getting Gronk back, as it sounds like that we'll get to also a little bit later, it sounds like he's going to have those guys at least for, and barring another injury to one of them, down the stretch run here. So these last six games, the bye came at a nice time for a lot of reasons, but more so than the rest, I kind of see it as a nice little six game window to now get this offense ready for a playoff run. And they have some opportunities against a team like the Jets, the Bills, of the world that are not exactly world beaters. And they also have, you know, opportunities against the Vikings and the Steelers, who are good teams, to kind of have it both ways and have some easier games where they can work on some stuff and then kind of put it to the test in those bigger marquee games. So it's a nice little six game schedule that they have, where they have a lot of games in the division against some, you know, poor teams, let's be honest. And then also some tough ones against the Vikings and against the Steelers. But I think the biggest thing, you know, just moving on from Brady a little bit here, that we wanted to get into was just the fact that even though this game is against the Jets and Josh McCown, who hasn't played very well this year, and the expectation is the Patriots should win this game easily, they've obviously had their struggles on the road, and they're 3-2 on the road. And the one big stat that kind of stands out to me is that their point differential on the road is a minus 31 in the first quarter right now, which is second to last in the NFL. And when you talk to the players in the locker room, the first thing out of all of their mouth about how to kind of turn the road stuff around is getting off to a fast start.
Yeah. I think getting off to a fast start, and also if you don't get up to a fast start, finding that sort of energy and commitment to, you know, come back. It seems like, you know, in these road losses, at least, they'll not only go off to a bad start, but they'll just sort of be sluggish the rest of the game too. And they don't really ever find that kick to them that starts them into a comeback. And that's strange, because usually, like, the Patriots, even if they lose, they'll make it, you know, a fight of it at some point. But there's been a lot of these games on the road where they just really, you get the sense that they didn't really put much effort into coming back. So I think part of that's even a mental thing, you know, like, it's, you know, coming back from adversity and stuff like that. I don't necessarily think it's going to be a problem this week. You know, like, we've said that before, of course. I mean, I didn't think they were going to lose to the Lions the way they did either.
Yeah.
But you just look at this Jets team and it's just like, all right, well, at least it's on the road and you can test that weakness.
Right.
But other than that, it's like, well, I don't know if we're going to truly see what you'd want to see out of this team is, like, you know, a test on the road and how they can handle it.
Yeah. Well, I think that, you know, kind of speaking to your point there, the Patriots have always been a very mentally tough team through the Belichick Brady era, through this entire run. They've always been the type of team that whether they start fast or slow, it doesn't matter, because they know that it's a 4-quarter, 60-minute game. And like you said, some of these games, especially in Detroit and in Tennessee, I think there was a little bit of fight in there in Jacksonville. And
right.
They certainly made it a little bit closer there than Jacksonville would have liked, but it just wasn't anywhere close to enough to make the game really that competitive. But
right.
Overall, their mental toughness this year, it seems like, one, especially on the defensive side of the ball, it snowballed them on them a little bit. And certainly on the offense side of the ball in some instances as well, where when they just get into these ruts this year, they're just not getting themselves out of it. And I think that at home, they have the crowd to feed off of. And the crowd has kind of, you know, gotten them back into some of these games, or even helped them start fast. And a lot of players also talking just about manufacturing their own energy, so that when, you know, you don't have the crowd to feed off of at the opening kickoff, because they're not rooting for you, they're rooting against you, they're booing you, whatever the case may be. And the players kind of are just saying that, you know, they're not starting games with that same energy, with that same compete level that they are at home. And then you kind of can see that play itself out throughout the course of the game. And whether or not this team is going to have to go on the road in the playoffs is one thing, but they're going to have to go on the road and play Pittsburgh. And that game is going to be basically for a bye in the AFC. Whichever team wins that game is more or less going to lock down that number two seed, you know, from the head to head tiebreaker. So that's, I think, even more of a big game in my mind than, you know, what we hypothetically could see in January, because I hate to play the hypothetical game. You know, you just never know who their opponent is going to be, whether they're going to go to Kansas City or not, or go to Pittsburgh or not. But the main thing is that you need to see this team be able to be more than just a front runner, you know, and they've been able to do that at home. Certainly. I mean, Green Bay, some of the other games that they've played at home, but you look at a game like Kansas City, for example, where they basically had the lead that entire game, and they kind of just held on in the end, you know, after Kansas City was the team that came back. They haven't really had that mental toughness that we're used to seeing, and I think that that's something that maybe Belichick won't talk about as openly as Brady, but Brady has certainly kind of alluded to in the past, like, this is not, it's never been with me that we need to get out to a 14-0 lead in the first quarter to win games on the road. You know, we can be behind, we can be tied, we can be whatever, and I just know that as long as we're in shouting distance in the fourth quarter that we're going to have a chance. But these games, I mean, they just haven't really been in shouting distance. And, you know, if you go 8-0 at home, obviously you can win 3 or 4 on the road and be a 500 team on the road and you still got 11 or 12 wins. Right. And it's really not that big of a problem. But, I mean, there's a couple tough road games. This one's not as tough, obviously, but we know their history in Miami. And we know that at Pittsburgh, whether the history is good or you know, good in this case for the Patriots in Pittsburgh, it's still going to be a tough one.
Right. Yeah, and I kind of am somebody who looks at the hypotheticals down the road.
Let's do it.
because the way I see it is, it, as good as this Patriots team is and as for as much as they did beat Kansas City during the regular season, I think asking them to beat this Kansas City team at Arrowhead would be a lot to ask.
Yeah.
That's just a different team in that place. And they're also just better in terms of offensively this year than, you know, and pretty much anyone expected. I mean, say what you want about their defense. I mean, that was a Big 12 game the other night.
Yeah.
with the Rams. So who knows? But you don't want to be on the road at Arrowhead. I think that's the number one thing. If I'm the Patriots, there's almost anywhere on the road in the playoffs that I can go and be fine. That's not one of them.
Yeah, I mean, their history in Arrowhead is not good either. Obviously, the 2014 game in Arrowhead is the one that really sticks out. And then, you know, Andy Reid's had his problems in the playoffs, obviously, too. But this is the first time that Andy Reid's had a Patrick Mahomes to lean on in the playoffs. And I think as much as Andy Reid has had his struggles, I think his teams haven't necessarily been anywhere close to as talented as this team. Maybe some of those early 2000s Eagles teams had close to the talent, you know, once they got T.O. there and stuff like that. But even still, this is definitely, I would say, the most talent that he's had. And Patrick Mahomes is the type of guy that he might throw 3 or 4 picks in a game, but he's not going to be shy to pull the trigger, whether it's the Patriots or the playoffs or whatever it may be, from everything that we've seen. All right, so the good news is for the Patriots, and even though they have to go on the road and Brady's been dealing with some stuff this week, is Rob Gronkowski told us today that he is good to go for Sunday. Gronk is back, and it sounds to me, just from watching him and you know, observing, that this is probably the healthiest that he's been in a long time. He seemed like his mood and his attitude was back to a really good spot, smiling and laughing and being, you know, what we're used to seeing Gronk be. But I think the main thing is, you know, still pre-Gronk injury this year, really only week one and in that fourth quarter against Kansas City, we've really seen dominant Gronk this year. So even if Gronk is back on the field, do we think that Gronk is back, you know, to being Gronk, or is this still going to be, you know, kind of this subdued version of Gronk that we've seen this year?
I think Well, it's weird. We talked about this before, and it seems like during the first half of a lot of seasons, it feels like they're like saving him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So maybe they start
the car is in the garage.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe they start to unleash him, or it could be one of those deals where they're at the point with him now where they save him for games they're going to need him. So like they save him for Pittsburgh. I mean, they could not play him against the Jets this week all they want and still win.
Right.
So, you know, does he get as many targets as he would if they really needed him? Probably not. You know, physically, I guess you can just look at him and see how he's moving just to see what it's like. But I don't think you're necessarily going to see like a monster performance from him this week because they're not going to need one from him. And I do think there is a bit of that with him on this team of managing his targets and stuff like that when it comes to, you know, trying to keep him healthy for when it gets really important.
Yeah, I mean, he's on a pitch count. You know, he's definitely on a pitch count. I think that the main thing is that his route tree is on a pitch count. Like, they're not sending him over the middle too often unless it's off of play action where they know that there's going to be displaced defenders and guys that are kind of a step behind, so he has that opportunity to react so it's not a bang-bang play. They're not sending him on that seam route. We really haven't seen that seam route since week one against the Texans where he caught it over like three guys and you're like, all right, this is Gronk. You know, he's still a beast. But I think that what we can look for in this game is like a flash, right? You know, last year against Jamal Adams, who will probably be going up against a lot this week again in New York, he had those two touchdown catches and that was really, he didn't have a huge game. You know, wasn't a 150 yards or anything like that, but he had those two touchdowns, and that 33 yarder that he caught on Adams was kind of that moment where, you know, he said, hey, rookie, you know, welcome to the NFL. And and that was kind of, you know, what I'm looking for in this game. Do we see that kind of flash? Obviously, he's got to be killing to not only get back on the field, but get back in the end zone. You know, he hasn't scored a touchdown since that week one touchdown against the Texans, which is just crazy. Regardless of if he's missed games or not, I mean, he's still played enough this season that you would expect that. And, you know, the other thing is that he hasn't been double teamed that much in the last, you know, couple of games that he's been out there. Buffalo really didn't double him all that much. And, you know, you kind of wonder, these other teams, are they starting to change their approach? Now, I think that having Gronk on the field obviously makes everything a lot easier. It opens up opportunities for everybody else, regardless of if it's a true double team or not. But there definitely has been some instances, you know, against that Buffalo where, you know, Matt Milano, who's a decent linebacker, but Matt Milano is taking Gronk in one-on-one coverage, you know, and without any double team, maybe a safety in the middle of the field, but, you know, a post safety, but nothing, you know, like we are used to seeing, maybe that we saw in against Detroit or Jacksonville or something like that. So is he affecting defense, as I think is probably almost as big as is he producing in the stat, you know, in the box score? And is he drawing extra coverage? Is he still, you know, that guy? Because I think that teams are kind of saying, you know, if he's going to make that circus catch where he makes that one-handed grab over a guy or along the sideline like he did in Buffalo, you know, he's probably going to do that whether it's single or triple or quadruple coverage. You know, he's 6'7". So if Brady's going to throw the ball up to him and he's going to go above the defense and make a catch like that, it's probably going to happen no matter what. And it seems like teams are kind of conceding that type of play, and they're saying, we know you're not going to run by me or, you know, run over me or do any of that kind of stuff anymore. It's more just like, you know, okay, if he has that one circus catch, if he has that one catch off of play action where they scheme him open, you know, so be it. So I'm very interested to see, you know, how he's running. Is he demanding extra coverage? Can we see a game where, you know, they put Deron Lee or Avery Williamson, the linebacker, on him in coverage, and we see the old Gronk burn a linebacker like he used to do automatically, you know, a couple of years ago or last year even. That used to be like an automatic, you know, Gronk has a linebacker on him, he's automatically open at the snap. And I don't know if that's happening as much, quite as much this year as it has in years past.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that flash is what you're like. I think that's a good point. If you see even something like that, then you come away from this game feeling okay just because, you know, like we've been talking about, this isn't a game that they need him. You know, they're not going to have to throw them, you know, 12 times a game, you know.
Right. And then you know that when it needs to happen, like a final drive against Pittsburgh or something like that, or a playoff game, when they need that type of Gronk, that it's still in there. And then maybe they're doing what we talk about all the time, which is just kind of saving him. And, you know, like when they need to kind of pull the Corvette out of the garage, it goes. And that's kind of the most important thing to me, because like you said, they could beat this Jets team without Gronk. And mainly I think he's probably playing in this game again because, well, A, he's healthy, but B, without Dwayne Allen, you know, they're just super thin at tight end. Yeah. You know, and Jacob Hollister is not really a tight end. And right now James Devlin's kind of your second or third tight end on the depth chart if Gronk doesn't play, which is just wild. So they kind of need him at this point. I mean, they need him long-term, obviously, for bigger picture reasons, but they need him in terms of just bodies at this point. All right, let's quickly move over to the defense side of the ball, and then we'll wrap up with one more offensive point. But we wanted to talk about the safety play of this team, because I think that amidst all of the stuff that's going on with the offensive side of the ball, the one thing that's kind of been on both of our radars all season long is that two players in particular, Devin McCourty and Patrick Chung, have taken, I would say, pretty significant step backwards in their play, just in their production and in their level of play from what we've seen in the past.
Yeah, I agree. I've seen it most out of Chung. It just seems like, you know, he was, you know, the previous few years, he was so noticeably a difference maker, not just in his coverage, but his open field tackling. I thought he was one of the best open field tacklers on the team. And I don't think that, you know, he's fallen off the map, so to speak. But I would just say that, like, you know, he doesn't seem like a difference maker right now. It feels like there's, you know, you can still make plays against them now. And I, you know, it just seems like, you know, before, you know, especially when he was covering tight ends, you know, he was so good against the other team's premier pass catching tight end. And then when, you know, somebody got open in the open field, I mean, and Chung was within distance, he would make the tackle. And I just don't see that same sort of consistency out of him this year.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, he was the best tackler on the team last year, I would say. And over the last couple of years, he's been kind of first or second on the team in tackles, and he's played that slot position, which in today's NFL definitely lends itself to a lot more tackle opportunities. But I think that the main thing is that they've just had their hands full with covering tight ends, and it doesn't really matter if it's the Travis Kelce's of the world or Eric Ebron or Johnny Smith against the Tennessee Titans, and they just have kind of had trouble locking down that position, where in years past it was like, all right, a tight end's going off, we're just going to put Chung on him and it's over. You know, that kind of, you know, puts a hole in the, you know, it kind of just ends whatever run the tight end is on. And this year, I think that the consistency hasn't been there at the line of scrimmage like it has in years past. But one of the things that always stood out to me with Chung is, and I think with anybody that watches him, is just his physicality. And yeah, he's always been an extremely physical player at the line of scrimmage. And I think that some of that also has to do with anticipation, studying opponents. And I'm not saying that he's, you know, taking any time off when it comes to that kind of stuff or anything like that, but right, it doesn't seem like he's, when you want to be a physical guy, especially in the secondary, you got to know what you're expecting and what's happening in front of you to do that. You can't just do that and, you know, have a guy really run a route that you're not expecting or something like that, because it just gets you so out of position so early in the route that you're in trouble. But when you can get your hands on guys, really anticipate kind of what they're doing, what their tendencies are, depending on where they're lining up, depending on the formation, you're able to be a guy like Patrick Chung, who doesn't have necessarily he's not the quickest, he's not the fastest, he's certainly not the fastest when he turns and runs downfield as some of these other guys on the team, but yeah, he's able to just kind of be very positionally sound and physical within the route and do all that kind of stuff. And I think that we've seen kind of him take a step back in that this year. And even with Devin McCourty too, I think it's kind of similar, where both of those guys have always been, for safeties, now not necessarily for corners, but for safeties, very solid man coverage players. And it hasn't been the case this year. I mean, Devin McCourty in that Titans game gave up a key third down conversion to a third string tight end. You know, that just doesn't happen a few years ago to Devin McCourty. Jonnu Smith is not beating Patrick Chung for touchdowns and for long receptions, breaking a tackle on him and running down the sideline last year. That just doesn't seem to be happening. And the reason why we brought it up is because, you know, post bye week, like you said earlier, they make a lot of adjustments. And I think that the one adjustment that we're kind of excited to see happen, what kind of happens with this player, is Duke Dawson. And I don't know if Duke Dawson, we don't know yet if he's going to be active for Sunday's game, his NFL debut just yet, but just looking forward, he's going to have a chance to play in the next six games or so at some point. And when they drafted Duke Dawson, I think we both kind of knew that. I thought maybe he was a Jonathan Jones upgrade, but now I'm starting to think that maybe it's more of a Patrick Chung type move, where he's kind of the guy that they're expecting to play some box safety to cover some tight ends, do that kind of stuff. And I think that we're kind of just interested to see how Dawson fits into this puzzle.
Yeah, I think if he does fit into that puzzle, I think he's better equipped for that than Jonathan Jones would be. Like, I've always felt like from watching Dawson in college that he is better in a tighter space. When you get him into, you know, sort of the open field, he can be more exposed. So, you know, we'll see how they use him. You know, and if they use him in a Chung type role, I think that would, you know, be more to his strengths. So we'll see. You know, I think, you know, you don't want to put any, you know, too much expectation upon any rookie, really, especially like if it's their first game. But, you know, if you want to get them off to sort of an easy transition, the Jets aren't a bad place to start. Yeah. You know, you could get a pick on Sam Darnold or something, but that's sort of my thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think that Dawson, you know, he definitely obviously is a slot guy that played a lot in the slot. And like you said, we had our concerns just watching his college tape about kind of, you know, playing with his back to the quarterback is what I would say. You know, turning and running with guys, running downfield, especially on the perimeter, and I think that when you play against a tight end, you don't have to do that as much, obviously, and you're going to run a lot of routes more over the middle and cover guys that way, and also some of his foot speed issues that we were a little bit worried about don't happen as much, obviously, when you face a tight end. And I think the main thing is that, you know, I think McCourty is the type of guy that can probably still play close to 100% of the snaps, but maybe the key is just that for Chung is that he's just playing too much football. And he's played too much football now for a couple of years where he's, you know, one of the guys that logs the most snaps every single year because he is such a smart, dependable player. So maybe Dawson can kind of just lighten the load a little bit on those two guys and give them some opportunities to maybe take a Patrick Chung off the field for a few snaps here and there. And maybe that helps that, you know, kind of break in between the game where he's not playing on, you know, 100% or 99% of the snaps that is Chung every single week, you know, can kind of help him out there too. I don't know if Dawson as a rookie is certainly not ready right now to play as much as a Patrick Chung is or something like that, or take that spot, but maybe just kind of play in spurts, kind of like what JC Jackson has done at times this year, and make his presence felt that way. And it's interesting because that position is so important now in the league because it, you know, teams are in nickel so much that the slot corner is a starter, you know, on the defense. And the Patriots run so many 2 and 3 packages with three safeties on the field that, you know, that those types of roles are just, you know, they're huge roles. They're more important in a lot of ways than like being a third linebacker is nowadays, because you're really only playing with one or two linebackers on the field at a time. Yeah. So they're essentially are the third linebacker. So it's very interesting to see. I'm excited to see Dawson play. Obviously we had some of our reservations about him in the pre-draft process, certainly. And then obviously after they made the pick, we kind of explained at that time, you know, why we weren't necessarily in love with it. But now that they've had the issues on the defensive side of the ball that they've had covering tight ends and covering the middle of the field, really, you can kind of see why they felt like they needed a player that could play inside like that in the secondary. And it'll be interesting to see. All right, last thing here. We wanted to talk about the receiver position, which down the stretch here, I just find to be one of the more fascinating positions on the team because of how many guys are not under contract next year. You know, this is kind of like a bunch of guys, Dorsett, Chris Hogan, Josh Gordon, in particular, playing for roster spots going forward and playing time going forward, really. Let's start with Josh Gordon, who has kind of been on my radar, obviously a lot on a lot of people's radar after Tennessee, but Brady only completing 53% of his passes to Josh Gordon is not, you know, the type of efficiency that you would really like to see.
No, it's not. I still think, though, he can make the type of plays that most players on the team can't.
Yeah.
It's still worth feeding him the ball. You take those chances, and in the times that you do get them, you're getting a big return on it, on that investment. So I still think, you know, obviously he's still, you know, he's another guy that could see things click even more after a bye week, you know. And that's what you would probably hope to see the most out of any of these guys is somebody like Gordon, because he's got the highest ceiling. So, you know, I feel with Gordon, it's one of those things like he's so talented that you just keep going to that well until you're sure it's not going to produce anything. And I just feel like, you know, the way this wide receiver core is set up right now, you need him. You know, you need Josh Gordon to play well. So it's almost like you don't have any other choice.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that 100%. And I think the main thing is just, you know, I think that the stuff saying that they're force feeding him is a little bit overblown, because it just doesn't pass the smell test with me that the Patriots would purposely risk losing games to kind of get a guy up into speed. And I know people kind of have like hinted that that's like something that happens like under the you know, in between the walls of Gillette Stadium. That's really what they're saying is, you know, oh, like let's force feed Josh Gordon 12 targets this game just so that him and Tom Brady's chemistry improves, because when it matters most, those 12 targets in Tennessee are going to matter. You know, that they had those throws between each other that fell incomplete. Like, come on. I mean, you know, the Patriots and Bill, no matter how many times Bill Belichick says that they coach every game in a vacuum to win that game, no one believes him. And yeah, no matter how many times Josh McDaniels says he calls plays to win the game, no one believes him. So whatever. I mean, that's just kind of my own issue with it. But I think the main thing is that, first of all, you don't survive the absence of Rob Gronkowski without Josh Gordon on this team. And the Josh Gordon trade was a complete home run. I mean, that was totally a great move, and they're totally getting a ton of return on their investment on that trade. Mm-hmm. I think that some of the things that you would like to see a little bit better are just, you know, the jump balls to the perimeter. I think Brady has at times fallen a little bit in love with, especially in Tennessee, because, you know, you see it every day in practice, Josh Gordon, I'm sure, posterizing guys and just like going up and making these ridiculous catches. And you just think that, like, you know, those are become automatic because we've seen them do it so much in the past. And it just necessarily hasn't been there as often as I think that they've gone to it. But overall, I mean, I don't think that what they're doing with Josh Gordon is anything bad. When Gronkowski's not on the field, I mean, who else are they going to throw it to 12 times?
Yeah.
You know, like, where else are those targets going to be, you know, put towards? And I think a lot of people...
You're not going to be force-feeding Chris Hogan. You know?
Right, right. Like, where else are those targets going to go? And a lot of people watch the tape back. I watch the tape back, and they say, hey, like, Chris Hogan was open on this play, or James White was open on that play, and he force-fed it to Josh Gordon. And it's like, yeah, I mean, maybe that could be true within a vacuum, but one or two plays where I thought that Tom Brady missed like an open receiver and forced it to Josh Gordon instead. So you take those two targets, maybe they make, you know, a difference, maybe they don't, you know, and it's so I think that some of it's a little bit overblown that they're force feeding Josh Gordon, but I would like to see Just a little bit more of higher percentage throws, some more schemed open situations to get him open deep. They have done a little bit of that, but just a little bit more of it. You know, that like that seam ball that they threw to him against Tennessee, great, great scheme, right? You know, get him on inside in the slot, get him on a linebacker or a safety running up the middle of the field. Great opportunity to get him open. I don't know if we're going to ever see like flash Josh Gordon again, like 2013 Josh Gordon again, but he's certainly playing at a high enough level right now. I mean, he's averaging almost 70 receiving yards a game to be a, you know, a factor for this team. But the one guy we wanted to talk about before we end things here is Philip Dorsett, who I think that a lot of people are is kind of on a lot of people's radar right now of maybe seeing some snaps over Chris Hogan as that third wide receiver behind Edelman and Gordon. And I personally think it's time, and this Jets game might be a perfect opportunity against a team that really has no business beating the Patriots. It might be a good time to just see what Dorsett can do if you give him some extended play like they did early on in the season.
Yeah, I'd agree. I've noticed it just seems like a couple of these last few games, he's made key catches on either third downs or on big drives and stuff like that, you know, for first downs. And it's just little pieces here and there, and it seems like he's maximizing his opportunities. So I kind of think that he's maybe even earned it, if you want to go that far, and say, you know, just like, you know, I feel like there's not – a ton of separation between the two guys. But I do think, you know, Dorsett's played well, and I think, you know, he's made the most of his opportunities. So I don't think it could hurt to see what he could do with more playing time against the Jets.
Yeah. I just think that the main thing for me is just that Dorsett is a more talented receiver. I mean, he's a guy that I think can consistently win in a route more often than Chris Hogan just on his own without scheme or anything like that. And what made Chris Hogan good in this offense was his fit in the system and his ability to kind of run routes both inside the numbers and outside and play a lot of different roles and move around the line of scrimmage. And they get him open those scheme opportunities, and he runs the right route, and he's in the right spot, and he's reliable with his hands and all those types of stuff. But all of that skill set doesn't matter if he's out of Tom Brady's circle of trust, you know, right. And if he's not, if Tom Brady's not going to throw him the ball when they do scheme him open, when they do have those opportunities, then he's not the other 50 or 55 snaps a game that he's out there, he's useless. You know, it's really, there's nothing that he's bringing to the table those other times. If those four or five times where they do have an opportunity to throw the ball or push it to him downfield, it's not going his direction, then what are we doing? And I think that Philip Dorsett has kind of proved over the whole course of the season that he's really improved his route running in particular, I think, from last year, especially in the short and intermediate game, where he's really getting open against guys and he's creating separation within his route, and he's able to break inside and out now and do some different things. And he brings a speed element to this offense also as well. So I'm kind of high on Philip Dorsett right now, because all year long I've seen him, whether it was early on in the season when he was playing a lot or now when he's playing sporadically and he has opportunities, I've seen him win routes. I've seen him get open against man coverage or zone coverage or whatever it is. And I just think that he deserves it. I agree with you 100% that he just deserves a chance to go out there and play a little bit more than he's been playing, because this offense right now, you know, Chris Hogan is only as good as they can make him. And if they're not going to give him the opportunity to make him good, then they need to put somebody in there that's going to demand a target. And I just feel like Dorsett is more that guy. I mean, first 4 weeks of the season, and especially before, you know, Josh Gordon arrived, Dorsett was really, really good for this team. You know, it certainly wasn't a game-breaking receiver or anything like that, but as a number two, or really a number three guy, I guess I would call him, with, you know, James White kind of being, you know, above him on the pecking order as well. You know, he's really like the fourth or fifth pass catcher, I guess is what you would call it. He was really doing a nice job in that role against some guys that, you know, second and third corners and things of that nature. So this team right now, I think, needs kind of a jolt in the arm. And I think Gronk will obviously give them a big one. But it for just for a little bit tweaks here and there outside of just adding a all pro tight end, you know, you go with a guy like Dorsett. I think that, you know, this week against the Jets, and, you know, this to tie us all together is a week where they should win this game going away. It shouldn't be difficult. So let's see them try some things. You know, post bye, they've had an opportunity to kind of reflect and figure out where some of their holes are. Let's see them try Philip Dorsett. Let's see if Duke Dawson is able to be active. Let's see them try Duke Dawson out there, you know, so on and so forth down the line with a couple of different guys. I'd like to see Derek Rivers or Dietrich Wise start playing a little bit more on the defensive line, you know, whatever it may be. I think all of those things are good possibilities. But all right, I think that's about covers it. I mean, we didn't talk much about the Jets, but I don't think that this week is much about the Jets. But just quickly, just so we've mentioned one Jets thing this entire time, what is, you know, one player or one thing about this game that you are kind of thinking that might give the Patriots problems or could help the Jets make this game closer than we think?
Well, we were mixing up this earlier, but they got some nice pieces on defense.
Certainly.
And so, like my guy has always been Jamal Adams, obviously an LSU safety. You know,
shocker.
Yeah, I know, really. But he's good, man. He's so versatile. You know, he's a playmaker. He knows the other team's tendencies sometimes better than the other team.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he's somebody that could maybe, you know, get an interception or force a fumble or something like that, you know, and maybe shift momentum here or there. And I also was, like to watch rookie quarterbacks. So get your eyes on that. So, for me, if I'm the Patriots, one guy I'm trying to keep my eye on at all times is Jamal Adams.
Yeah, and he lines up everywhere. So you're going to have to like kind of identify where he is. And Belichick pointed him out as just like a really aggressive player at the line of scrimmage, whether it's the run game or the pass game. Yeah. He's a great player. And they have a couple of, you know, really great players on the defensive side of the ball. I mean, Leonard Williams is obviously another really good one. And both their linebackers, Deron Lee and Avery Williamson, have had their moments this year. Very fast, athletic guys. Yeah. And I think that we, you know, my thing is I think that sometimes we fall into the trap of thinking that one week in the NFL has anything to do with the next. And people watch Matt Barkley just carve up the defense for 41 points. And you go and you watch that tape and it's, I mean, they gave up 41 points to Matt Barkley. I get it. But at the same time, it took a fake punt. And it took a tackle eligible. You know, they threw a touchdown to a tackle. They faked a punt to an extended drive. You know, there was some fluky kind of things going on in that game that kind of led to all those points. And you look at, you know, kind of Barkley's day, he made some nice throws, but it certainly wasn't, you know, anything crazy. And, you know, just on the offense side of ball for the Jets, which is, you know, super limited this year for sure. But Isaiah Crowell is one of those guys that, for some reason, every once in a while, he just has a 200-yard game, like out of nowhere, like he did against San Francisco earlier on in the season. And he's certainly one of those running backs that's kind of a workhorse that you can hand the ball off to 30 or 35 times in a game and really grind out a game. And I think that that's probably – the Jets need to ugly this game up. You know, they need to make this game sloppy. They need to make this game ugly, and they need to try to win ugly. And you do that with a running game and with, you know, messing it up a little bit on the defensive side of the ball, too. And they certainly have the players on the defense to be physical, aggressive, and force maybe some turnovers or negative plays. So I think that that's kind of the formula, because if they just line up against the Patriots 11 on 11 and try to, you know, spread the ball out and throw the ball and do all that, it's not going to work. So they really need to play a clock control game, and they need to play with their defense first and hope that the defense can win the game for them. And really, I mean, if you put the Jets defense is better than the Patriots defense right now. They're okay defense. They're not certainly not an elite defense, you know, but they're a above average defense, especially in today's NFL. So it's interesting because I think that they present enough of a kind of resistance on the defensive side of the ball to make this kind of a good live practice almost for the offense to kind of iron out some of the things that they have to, you know, work out. But running game, both of us agreed, you know, aggressive defense, I think is really the two keys. All right, what do you got going on this weekend? I know you mentioned you're going to BC tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm going to BC tomorrow. They're playing Syracuse. It's their last regular season game. They'll obviously be going to a bowl who they already got 7 wins. But, yeah, this is actually a pretty interesting game because Syracuse is ranked. And this is really the closest BC is going to have to a rival in the Atlantic Coast Conference because, you know, I mean, you know, most of the rest of the league is way down other part of the country. So,
yeah.
So it's kind of fun. There's a lot of Syracuse people in the area always. And, you know, it should be a good game. And I think BC really needs to win it because, you know, last week they lost at Florida State in a game they really should have won. And if they go into the bowl on a 2-game or it would be a 3-game losing streak, it'd be pretty disappointing for them given how high their expectations got at some points during the year.
Yeah, so I got a quick question, BC-related question for you. I want your take. So I was with Mike Petracca, shout out to Trags, earlier today, and he told me that he's not so sure that Adazio is going to be back next year if this goes, you know, belly up for BC over the next couple weeks. I wanted to hear your opinion on Coach Adazio and if you think that he's in it for the long haul.
Well, here's the thing is, you know, BC has really started to go all in on this football program now. I mean, that indoor practice facility cost a pretty penny.
Yeah.
You know, and it's one of the best in the league, and you know, it rivals that of teams that really put their efforts into football and resources. And you know, this is Adazio's 6th year. 5 of them he's had winning seasons, but all 5 of them he's only had 7 wins.
Right.
Yeah. If you're going to tell me with
this, so he's the Jeff Fisher of college football.
Right. So, all right. So if you're going to tell me that, you know, Adazio, you know, is the guy, then okay. Well, this is 6 years in. This is what maybe his most talented team, and the best he can get out of it is 7 wins, just like these other teams. That's the kind of pressure he's under. But obviously he's got his real strengths, man. He's a very good recruiter. This is a talented football team. They didn't beat a Miami team sort of flukily. That they were the better, more talented team. And he's putting guys into the NFL. But they just need to win these 50-50 games that have gone the other way just a few too many times during his tenure. So I could see that. But yeah, but that's why I think this is one of those games they need to win. They need to get to 8 wins, 9 wins, and sort of put that sort of ceiling underneath them.
Yeah, yeah, that was a good answer. I think that, you know, I don't know nearly as much about it as you and Trags do, obviously, but it seems to me just based off of what I know about the NFL talent on the roster, you know, just from talking to you or whatever, that, you know, this team should be a good team. You know, in college football with the you got, you know, Zach Allen and the running back is escaping my mind right now. But, you know, yeah, you know, there's just a lot of talent on this team that, as you know, 7 win season seems a little bit, you know, lackluster for sure. All right. On CLNS Media this weekend, we're going to be at MetLife Stadium driving down tomorrow with Alex Barth, and Trags will be there as well on Sunday for Patriots Jets. So we'll have live coverage from the game, which will be awesome. And you can check that out on our YouTube page, clnsmedia.com, at Patriots CLNS on Twitter. And, you know, our normal routine, we'll have pregame stuff during the game, obviously, you know, takeaways and stuff like that after the game as well. So check that all out. And, on the website live right now, have my Patriots game plan, which I do obviously every Friday. Just looking at not so much anything that the Patriots need to do in particular to beat the Jets, because I think they could probably beat the Jets in 5 different ways and get out of it and be fine. But more just stuff that I would like to see them post by, clean up, you know, picking up blitzes, Josh Gordon stuff, running game, getting Sony Michel back going, that kind of stuff. And I will also be writing this weekend at some point about Lawrence Guy. I spoke to him today, just really think that he's one of those guys that has really just fit in extremely well with the Patriot way, and obviously has been playing at a high level as well this year. And I think that just talking to him, you can just tell that he's just been a perfect fit, both personality-wise and, you know, football-wise. In on that interior of the Patriots defensive line, and it isn't even, you know, forced with him. The way that he speaks is just like, it's like Belichick is already in him, but like, it's not, it doesn't seem forced. It seems like that's just how he naturally is. And guy who's right. A seventh round pick that's made it, you know, 8 years in the NFL at this point is pretty amazing. Yeah. So I really think that he's an interesting story and an interesting player that, you know, every once in a while the Patriots, you know, sign one of these free agents for like kind of a middling, you know, veteran contract that isn't a Stephon Gilmore or someone like that, that makes a big splash. And you know, you're paying Lawrence Guy like $5 or $6 million a year over the next couple of years, and he's just been a great fit. So I'll have that out this weekend. Probably once you've listened to the podcast, it'll probably already be up. But be sure to, you know, stay with us for Sunday against the Jets. And the next week, this one is kind of one that I think a lot of people have had circled on the calendar. The Minnesota Vikings maybe haven't lived up to the hype as much as they were kind of touted as a Super Bowl contender or Super Bowl favorite, even by some out of the NFC, but certainly a ton more to talk about in terms of matchups and stuff like that with that game than what we had this week with the Jets. So that's going to be a really fun one to break down. And Adam and I will obviously have that on here on the Patriots All 22 podcast for you then. But signing off for Adam Kirchin, I'm Evan Lazar. Thanks for listening.